Welcome to PostView.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Federal Health Quality and Health IT Landscape Quarterly Update Conference Call. During the presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. Afterwards, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. At that time, if you have a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. If at any time during the conference you need to reach an operator, please press star 0. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded Wednesday, August 8, 2008. I would now like to turn the conference over to Meg Horgan. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you. Well, welcome, everyone. I'm Meg Horgan. I'm the VP for Client Services at Premier, and I'd like to welcome you to our second Federal Health Quality and Health IT Landscape Quarterly Update. And just as a reminder, the purpose of this update is to keep you informed on national initiatives and legislation as it relates to quality improvement, reporting, and payment reform. I'd like to introduce our speakers today. Nicole Silverman is a senior associate from Booz Allen Hamilton, and Danielle Lloyd is a senior director for reimbursement policy for Premier. Following Danielle and Nicole's presentation, we'll open it up for questions. So with that, I'll turn it over to Danielle, who'll get us started.
Thanks very much, Meg. I'm glad to be on the call with you all this afternoon. As many of you know, Premier has a D.C. office that advocates on your behalf through congressional lobbying, but a lot of you probably don't know that we also work on the regulatory front with various federal agencies, and that includes submitting comments on all of the major Medicare payment regulation, and that's where I come in. We work with each of your organizations in preparing our comments and also coordinating the field's response. And we do that through our CEO committees as well as through our policy committee of government relations professionals. And so if you don't know who at your organization we work with, we'd be happy to speak with you and let you know and make sure that you get looped in the event that you're not. But let's go ahead and get started with the presentation. Okay, so the first thing we're going to talk about is a quick update on some legislation, the Medicare Improvements for Patients and Providers Act of 2008. Most of you have probably heard of this law because it reversed the 10.6% reduction in payments to physicians, but there are a number of noteworthy other provisions in this law that we wanted to share with you all. And the first is a $10 million amount of money set aside for 4 years, so $10 million each year for 4 years, for measure development activities. And that is generally expected to go to the National Quality Forum, although it's not specifically mentioned. There's also an expansion to the Physician Quality Reporting Initiative, an expansion of CMS's authority to add preventative services to the benefit package, as well as include costs as part of that decision-making, which CMS does not currently do. And also, it adds an e-prescribing bonus for physicians. So that's the quick update on that particular law. Let's go ahead and move on to the Medicare Inpatient Prospective Payment System Final Rule for fiscal year 2009. CMS released this rule on July 31st. Although it's going to be published in the August 19th Federal Register. We are very pleased that CMS has indicated to Premier that we had a significant impact on the formulation of the final rule in the areas we're going to cover today, and that is the quality measures and the hospital-acquired conditions. If you all happen to be interested in the payment areas or other aspects of the rule, you can tune into a call we're holding tomorrow at noon. We can get you that information, and it is on our website. But today we're going to stick to these two topics. So on the quality measures, firstly, CMS greatly pared back the quality measures for reporting in fiscal year 09 and payment in fiscal year 2010. They had proposed 43 measures. So we're very happy with that, but we are still a bit concerned that they are moving too quickly. We argue that most of the measures selected are not mature enough for national implementation. For instance, many of the measures are not field tested, or some of them are in the process of field testing, and we think that this is an important step to ensuring that the measures are reliable, accurate, etc. But the good news here is that the measures that CMS chose mostly are based on administrative data. So that means that you won't have the additional burden associated with chart abstraction. Now, you note on this slide that it says there are, we have a little technical difficulties here. I moved on. You'll see on this slide that it says 13 measures. What I do want to point out here, it did say in the Rule 13 measures and in the press releases, et cetera, but I want to point out that there may be a correction notice coming on this, and it may practically be 12 measures. We're not quite sure yet. We've been asking some questions. It may be that there's what might be characterized as a substantive typo, and that two measures may be labeled, or it may be labeled as two measures when really, in fact, there's only one. And I'll point that out as we get into the tables that are upcoming. So just something I wanted to point out, you may see further information that 13 may become a 12. CMS also announced in this rule that they will add 3 of the proposed 9 hospital-acquired conditions for which CMS will pay the lower DRG rather than the higher DRG if there are not any other complications or comorbidities present. So again, the conditions, if acquired at the hospital, cannot qualify the case for higher payment, but the case may still get higher payment if there are other complications and comorbidities. And we'll talk about some specifics on that in a minute. So on the next slide, these slides provide you with the measures themselves, as well as the data sources and the data submission dates for your convenience. And I'm not going to go through each of them, but I'm going to point out a few of them. And the first one is the nursing sensitive measure, failure to rescue. And this is one of the measures I mentioned may be a duplicate. So you might want to put a little question mark there and note that for yourself. The second thing I want to note are the cardiac measures. CMS is only adopting this one cardiac measure, participation in a systemic database for cardiac surgery. And we're very pleased with this, that CMS did not implement the other 14 cardiac measures because they're based on proprietary methodologies and algorithms. And this is something that we met with Deputy Administrator of CMS and his staff about. And it's not that we necessarily had a problem with the measures themselves or with the registry that proposed them, but Premier firmly believes that all aspects of measures used for public reporting should be completely transparent and replicable. And we do not believe that it's appropriate for the government to essentially set up a monopoly with one vendor. In fact, Premier is so committed to this that, or this principle, that we're making our own NQF endorsed measure as well as at least another measure public. So let's go ahead and move to the next slide. On this slide, what I want to point out is the AHRQ, Agency for Healthcare Research and Quality measure. The first one, death among surgical patients with treatable serious complications. And that is the second measure that may be the duplicate of the nursing sensitive failure to rescue. So that's the other one you want to put a little question mark next to and keep an eye out for later this year. So moving to the next slide, note that CMS may adopt 2 more measures, again, for reporting in 2009 and payment in 2010, and those 2 are the readmission measures for AMI and pneumonia, and this would go with the heart failure readmission measure that was already adopted in this rule. So those 2 are waiting NQF endorsement and may be finalized in the outpatient rule, and that's usually out by November 1st of this year. So keep an eye out for that one as well. You can also note that CMS has 28 measures that they plan to repropose next year that are, by and large, require chart abstraction. So this year, CMS mostly went with the administrative data. It was easy for them to implement. Next year, there are quite a few measures on deck, if you will, that may require significant chart abstraction. I would also point out the areas in which CMS notes that it's going to put some focus on for the future, and that's diabetes care, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, and chest pain. So those are their focus areas moving forward. Now I'm going to go ahead and go to the end of this table, and you can look through these measures at your leisure, and we're going to go to the hospital-acquired conditions slide. So as you know, CMS chose 8 of these conditions in last year's rule. So we were a bit disappointed to see that CMS was a bit overzealous, you might say, in adopting 3 more this year when they were only required to pick 2. Now, CMS is saying that there will be a total of 10 for fiscal year 2009, so I'm sure you're wondering how 8 and 3 add up to 10. So I want to clarify this because you'll see a lot in the press. There's been different numbers. So the way the math here works is that if you look at the new conditions for this year, manifestations of poor glycemic control is considered new. Deep vein thrombosis and pulmonary embolism is also considered new. But the surgical site infections is considered an expansion of the surgical site infections category that was established last year. So last year it only included mediastinitis, but now this year they're adding certain orthopedic surgeries and bariatric surgeries for the obese. So in total, CMS will say that there are 10 conditions. Let me also clarify something on this slide, that while the category is called DVT and PE, practically speaking, CMS has only chosen PE codes. So the policy itself does not actually apply to DVT at this time. However, CMS does expect to add DVT codes in the near future, so they wanted to name the category the broader names to make sure that folks are focusing in this area. So what are our thoughts on this? Well, basically, we think that CMS is moving in the right direction and focusing in these areas, but we're concerned that many of these conditions are not always reasonably preventable, that oftentimes they lack clear, proven clinical guidelines. They may be difficult to determine whether they're present on admission, right? You have to know if these conditions happened prior to the person getting to the hospital or at the hospital for this policy to work. And we think that they need to be risk-adjusted, which we did submit extensive comments on, and CMS did acknowledge, but at this time, they're not really adding any risk adjustment. So we'll continue to work with CMS to improve this policy and watch for unintended consequences. So these are some of the ones that you want to pay attention to, similarly to the quality side. Delirium, VAP, staph septicemia, C. diff, MRSA, Legionnaire's disease, iatrogenic pneumothorax. I point all these out because these are areas that you might think, okay, we're off the hook, these were not chosen by CMS, but keep in mind that CMS is very likely to repropose many of these next year, and that many of these will be integrated into the CMS quality measurement program, which, as you know, puts 2 percentage points of your inflationary update at stake each year. So these are areas that you might also want to take some time and look more closely at in your quality improvement programs. And then lastly, just want to point out that CMS will pay for the present on admission code W, and that basically says that the hospital did due diligence to try to figure out if the condition was present on admission, but simply clinically was not able to. So that's important to know. So moving on here. Basically, I think on this slide, since we are running a little bit late, I'll just say I pointed out already risk adjustment is something that they're not doing much of. They're looking to do that in the future, possibly integrate it into a value-based purchasing plan. And certainly I would say while adopting ICD-10 is mentioned in the rule, it's something that's probably quite far off, so not really realistic at the moment. So going ahead and moving on to the next slide, I do just want to cover a quick other piece, and that is that CMS did also note on the day that the rule was released that they are they did send a letter out to the state Medicaid directors encouraging them to pick up the hospital-acquired conditions policy that CMS has adopted. And so I would just, the reason I point that out is just to let you know, the CMS hospital-acquired conditions policy on its own is not actually going to impact your institution very much in terms of dollars. This is $107 million over 5 years for all hospitals in the country. So that's about $30,000 per hospital over 5 years. But this is just the tip of the iceberg. The Medicaid, many state Medicaid programs are starting to pick this up. You've heard this from Cigna, Aetna, WellPoint. Lots of plans are jumping on board here, and that this is really just the beginning. The last thing that I want to point out is that CMS made one other announcement the day the rule came out, and that is that they will be accepting comments until August 30th on three national coverage decisions related to surgery on the wrong patient, surgery on the wrong body part, and wrong site surgery. So in this case, this is truly non-payment. There's no coverage, as opposed to the hospital-acquired condition policy where there is lesser payment. This is something that we plan on commenting on, and we will share it with the membership. So we're going to go ahead and move on to the outpatient PPS. What I will simply say here is that Premier will be submitting comments on this rule. We do have a detailed summary up on the website for you. We do expect to express some reservations about the quality measures that Nicole is going to go through, and we are working with the National Association and other stakeholders, and do look out for our comment letter that should be available by August 25th, and we do plan on holding a conference call to go through the comments and assist members with their comments on August 26th at 2 p.m. So go ahead and note that in your calendar and look for more information on our listservs and on our website. So with that, Nicole?
Thanks, Danielle. Okay, now we're going to go through all the provisions of the Outpatient Prospective Payment System rule. And on this slide 14, we just have a summary. Through the Outpatient Prospective Payment System rule, CMS is proposing to add four new quality measures. They've also floated an additional 18 measures in nine measure sets that they're considering for future payment years, and they wanted comments on those and how they could be harmonized across care settings. They did propose a methodology for validating the outpatient data. As you're probably aware, the data you're submitting now is not being validated, and the methodology that they've suggested is different from what they're doing on the inpatient side, so we'll go over that. They deferred from requiring ambulatory surgical centers to report data once again, and they said that because the ambulatory surgical centers are currently going through a major change in the way they're reimbursed, they didn't want to also require them to do quality reporting at the same time. So they said they will do that in a future rulemaking. They are inviting comment on how to apply the hospital-acquired conditions policy that Danielle covered into the outpatient setting. And then we just have where you can submit your public comments, which are due, it looks like, about a week after Premier is having that conference call. So moving to the details here. The four measures that CMS is proposing are all imaging efficiency measures. You can see them here. And they all can be calculated from claims data. So ostensibly, there won't be a burden on the hospitals to collect these measures. For purposes of the calendar year 2010 payment determination, though, they will calculate the measures based on 2008 claims data, which is pretty consistent with how they normally, when they do calculate measures from claims data, they do usually do it from a prior period. The other thing that's interesting is they've submitted the measures to NQF for endorsement, but they're not yet endorsed. They're part of a larger NQF project on imaging and the final results from that, including an endorsement decision, I believe will be out in October. So it is likely that that decision will be made before CMS issues its final outpatient prospective payment system rule. And so they might be consistent with what they did on the inpatient side, and that is to only adopt measures that are NQF endorsed. Now, they did also, again, to get comments, provide a list of measures that they're thinking about. Some of these may look familiar. They've been proposed in other care settings. Others may be new. And they do want comments on these to try to understand what the challenges are for collecting and reporting them. So if you are going to submit comments, take a look at those. The next slide that I want to spend a little time on is the new validation process that CMS is proposing. Clearly, the current process for the inpatient program has been questioned and at times even criticized by various entities. And so CMS appears to have listened to this and is proposing a different methodology. And the way to summarize it best is more charts but less frequently. So what they're going to do is they are going to ask hospitals for 50 charts across an entire year rather than doing it quarterly as they do now, but that not every hospital every year would have their information validated. What they would do is take about a fifth of the reporting hospitals in each year and do a random sample of those. So they'll randomly sample around 800 hospitals, and those hospitals would be required to submit these 50 charts. So theoretically, over the course of 5 years, they'd hit all the hospitals nationally, although because it's a random sample that's independently done every year, it doesn't mean that, say, your hospital was chosen 1 year that you wouldn't get chosen the next year. So then the process at that point would be fairly similar to what you're doing on the inpatient side. You'd send copies to the CDAC, and the CDAC would independently re-abstract from the records. But then the way the hospital's validation score would be calculated is different. They want to look at percent agreement for each measure rather than looking at agreement for individual data elements, which makes sense on a variety of levels. If they're going to move to some sort of value-based purchasing, they're going to do that at the measure level. And also that means that if there's a problem with some of the administrative data elements that aren't used for calculating the measure, it won't be held against the hospital. Again, there's an 80% pass rate. Confidence intervals will be calculated the same way. And then just to get additional information, CMS also said, well, you know, if we don't do it this way, we could also just do it the same way we do on the inpatient side, or we could target hospitals for validation based on accuracy concerns. And that would likely be if the lower bound of the confidence interval was below 80%, those would be the hospitals that they might target, or they could just combine any of these different methodologies, and they are seeking comment on how to proceed. And then, as I mentioned, they're also looking at how they can take this concept of hospital-acquired conditions and apply it to the outpatient setting. But they do say we're not, at least not now, proposing new Medicare policy. So they're just kind of seeking comment. And they want to know, you know, how reasonably preventable is a condition, especially when you're talking about a hospital outpatient setting where the interaction is very short. Are there evidence-based guidelines that can be used to select the hospital-acquired conditions that would be appropriate for the outpatient setting? And then probably most vexing for CMS is they're trying to figure out how can we take this outpatient prospective payment system, which is tied to volume of services. It doesn't have the complicating conditions or major complicating conditions that the inpatient system does that's based on severity. This is based on volume. So if they were going to implement a hospital-acquired conditions policy, how would they fairly kind of dock the hospital's pay? It's not as easy as it's not paying for that higher DRG. So they're looking for input on that. And they did throw out a few candidate measures for the outpatient setting. You can see those there. They overlap with some of the inpatient ones as well. Now we're just going to do a few quick other updates on the quality side. The 30-day mortality measures for AMI, heart failure, and pneumonia that have been updated were supposed to be posted, but they've been delayed, and there's nothing on the website or any information that at least that we have of when they are going to be posted. And the display is going to be slightly different. They're going to display actual mortality rates they're going to display case volume. There's going to be a drill down and also a downloadable file. And going forward, they're contemplating even additional options for displaying these mortality measures because, of course, they're sensitive to the fact that when they were proudly unveiled last year, virtually all hospitals were kind of in that national average, and there were very few outliers, so it was not a, from a consumer point of view, it wouldn't be a particularly helpful piece of information if they were trying to use it for decision making about healthcare. So they're looking at ways where there could be more outliers on both sides, and you can see some of the options here. They may decrease the confidence intervals. They may instead of using a mean and confidence intervals, they could use a percentile distribution, like show the top decile and the bottom decile. And they could increase the number of years to generate results, which for small hospitals would be helpful because there would be more data in there. The children's asthma care measures also have been delayed in reporting, and obviously it's been a little bit of time since trying to decide how to get these measures up. There was an internal issue with CMS and Medicare trying to understand how they could put pediatric measures up on a Medicare site, but apparently that was worked out, and two of the three Joint Commission measures, CAC 1 and 2, will be reported. As you can see on the second bullet, however, these measures are pretty much topped out, and they may not provide particularly helpful information, again, from the consumer point of view, if someone's going there to try to use the information to make healthcare decisions. There also was a little bit of an administrative issue where not all the hospitals that wanted to report submitted the right paperwork in the right time frame, so when these are released, it's possible that not all of the hospitals will be displayed, but then when the data are refreshed, they will be. And finally, on the National Quality Forum has a project about public reporting of healthcare-associated infection data. And NQF is concerned that states are starting to, we've talked about this before, that states are starting to require healthcare providers to report this kind of information publicly. But sometimes the measures that have been very useful for internal quality improvement may not be sensitive enough to be used for public reporting where they need to be comparable across hospitals. So NQF was concerned about this and started a project to look into this. And what they did was they both looked at measures that were appropriate and put together a framework, as they often do. So you can see here they had 13 measures that report healthcare-associated infections that they had already endorsed as part of other projects. And they decided, based on all that they reviewed, they added an additional 7 that you can see here on this slide. They also, if you look at the bottom of this slide 24, they realized when they were looking at what measures would be appropriate that there were some areas where there really were measures that they, no measures that they thought were good for public reporting. So they wanted to highlight these 8 areas that you can see at the bottom of the slide. To encourage measure developers to take a look at this and develop measures. At the top of this slide, you can see they tried to put together a framework to guide development and use of measures on healthcare-associated infection for public reporting, and these cover everything from the type of metrics, the kinds of specs, that the data ought to be validated, all the things that you would expect, but just trying to put a framework in for folks to follow. Now we're going to talk about 2 more NQF policies. The first is their measure evaluation criteria, and NQF is looking at updating these to keep pace with the changing world of performance improvement and performance measurement. And they wanted to review their criteria to identify areas where they needed to be clarified or strengthened. And they wanted to look at different types of conditions that had to be met before a measure is considered. and they have done this. It hasn't necessarily changed the criteria that much, but they did want to update their policies. Also, they're taking a look at proprietary measures and how these ought to be used. And Danielle touched on this a little bit when she was talking about the STS registry measures that are a part of the Inpatient Prospective Payment System final rule. And when N2F originally looked at this many years ago, they wanted to have an open source, no charge policy for measure specs. And then they quickly realized that there were certain types of measures, especially those that have regression-based risk adjustment methodologies, that it didn't necessarily make sense to stick to this open source policy. So they made some adjustments for that. And now that the whole state of measurement has gotten much more complex, they wanted to revisit this and try to come out with a policy about how to look at, you know, we've got measure developers that are developing some of these measures and clearly want to keep them on a proprietary basis, and but yet they may be very useful, yet we don't want to have barriers for providers to use them. So they've come up with a policy, and it's out for comment, which you can see at the bottom, where they want to have measure descriptions and clinical demographics variables publicly disclosed. Database elements can be disclosed to an N2F expert panel, but can be kept confidential. And there can be what they call a reasonable fee. And providers cannot be required, if they submit data to this system or registry, they can't be required to have their data used for other purposes. So that is currently up for comment. And now we're going to turn to an in-depth look at hospital rating systems, and my colleague Brittany Chow is going to take us through this.
Thank you, Nicole. So we have here in the hospital rating sections, we've seen through the 1990s the arrival of several hospital rating sites. Each of these sites served to increase transparency and information exchange on items such as cost, coverage, or access to services. They hope to drive consumers to receive care from high-value providers, improve the quality of care through stimulating this more competitive environment from the providers, as well as to propel payment reform and in hopes to subdue the rapid increase in the cost and increase the value of care provided. Some of these hospital rating programs we see here on the bottom of the slide, U.S. News & World Report, they're America's Best Hospitals, Solutions and Thompson, formerly HCIA, the Joint Commission, LeapFrog, HealthGrades, and WebMD. On the next slide, we have a little bit more information on the hospital rating system from CMS, along with HQA, Hospital Compare, and they aim to make it easier for the consumer to make informed healthcare decisions and support efforts to improve quality in U.S. hospitals. Hospital Compare does publicly report hospital performance in a unified manner through process of care measures, hospital outcome of care measures, survey of patients' experiences through the HCAHPS survey, and Medicare inpatient hospital payment information. So despite Hospital Compare's presence, the pre-existing sites have flourished and new sites have entered the market. Two of these sites include Consumer Reports and Data Advantage. Here we see a bit of comparison between these two sites. Both were launched in 2008. Consumers Report is a web tool based on the Dartmouth Atlas of healthcare data on end-of-life care of patients with severe chronic illnesses. They survey about just under 3,000 hospitals nationwide, and the hospitals are scored on a 100-point scale based on how aggressively they treat patients on 9 serious conditions in the last 2 years of life. The Data Advantage hospital rating site is a web-based value index. They measure the relative value of care provided by U.S. hospitals, which include more than 1,500 general acute care hospitals in America's 100 largest cities. These new rating systems provide the consumer with different ways of evaluating hospital care. Consumer Reports' reliance on Dartmouth Atlas data introduces the consumer to the idea that quality can mean fewer interventions, especially in the last months of life. Hospitals on the Consumer Report site are rated as providing conservative care, meaning fewer days in the hospital in the ICU and fewer doctor visits overall, with the emphasis on primary care versus aggressive care, which is just the opposite, spending more days in the hospital in the ICU with more doctor's visit overall. For each of the hospitals, the tools also displays out-of-pocket costs. The point is made over and over that aggressive care is not necessarily equivalent to better outcomes. The Data Advantage Hospital Value Index, however, defines value based on three components. 40% of the score is driven by quality, which is devised of the National Hospital Quality Measures, Key Patient Safety Measures from ARC, Joint Commission Accreditation, and inclusion of LeapFrog survey results. The other 45% of the score is affordability and efficiency, and the last 10% is patient satisfaction derived from the HCAHPS data. On the Hospital Value Index, there is also a section where hospitals can receive a ranking based on their reputation in the local market.
And I think one thing that that is interesting is that they are clearly trying to mimic what hospitals would experience under a value-based purchasing plan, so that they're trying to come up with some sort of composite looking at various aspects of that, and that's what they're really, how they're distinguishing themselves in the market.
So while hospital rating sites have the potential to change the way consumers choose their care, few of them are using in their healthcare decision making. So here we have a few statistics from the California Healthcare Foundation as well as a Kaiser Family Foundation survey. While there has been an increased use of hospital and physician rating sites, few of the consumers are actually using the information to make a health decision. Here at the bottom of the slide, we find that the most active users of these sites could very well be the providers themselves, who use them as a new tool for managing and improving their patient care. For example, the work of Judy Hibbard and others show public reporting of quality information actually encourages hospitals to initiate quality improvement activities. Public reporting can also have providers who use online ratings to negotiate discounts in their malpractice fees, as seen in a Cincinnati practice. So what are the implications for consumers? It's become a bit confusing for them. As the hospital rating differences in scope, data inputs, and methodologies often produce incongruent ratings that may contradict the intention to promote transparency. So what we've done here is used a large tertiary hospital in a major metropolitan area, and we've searched each of the sites that we presented today, including Solution, U.S. News & World Report, HealthGrade, Hospital Compare, Consumer Reports, and Data Advantage. While Solution, U.S. News, and HealthGrade did give this hospital high ratings, Hospital Compare, Consumer Reports, and Data Advantage did not give the same hospital the high ratings that the other systems had. Implications for the policymakers. HQA has issued a letter in April to CMS advocating for change in how information is shared on Hospital Compare in order to improve its appeal and usability for the consumers. These improvements include such things as using consumer testing to revamp data displays, address concerns about cognitive difficulties in navigation, develop condition and treatment-specific composite measures, and improve the value of the mortality information. We do hope to see CMS making some of these updates in the near future. So the implications for the hospitals. Rating systems are not going away, so be sure to explore creative use of them. As we've heard today, some consumers are looking at these sites, and it is likely that more will follow suit, as the Kaiser poll illustrates below. Be prepared to respond to consumers' questions about the data and indices being used in the industry.
So I think that wraps up the presentation for today. We do want to alert you to the fact that in the appendix, as usual, we have lots of details on what you can see here. So if you need that for reference, please feel free to look at that. And I think now we're ready for questions.
Nicole, perhaps before we open it up to questions, I was going to invite Danielle or Stephanie Alexander is also on the line to make any comments about the NQF proprietary measures.
Okay, yes, certainly.
This is Stephanie. I did want to mention a couple of things that
we've been doing, leveraging many of you. Number one, we are actively involved with NQF in supporting the registries, but yet helping them understand the cost that it would be to our hospitals across the country to endorse each and every one of these registries and proprietary methodologies. We have been a founding member of National Quality Forum, as many of our hospitals have as well, and this is pretty much going against their philosophies in the past, and we think it is not the right approach for them. On the other hand, we obviously support highly the need to measure outcomes. We want to measure those with sound methodologies. We want to make sure that those are very public, non-proprietary, etc. We have obviously need to lead by example in doing that, and therefore our mortality scientific methodologies that we acquired from the Care Science Organization are absolutely publicly available and beginning to be used in research that's been funded by organizations like the Commonwealth Fund. And we are all challenged with how you do that in terms of allowing all hospitals access to be sure that they can see where they are in their OE ratios, et cetera. And we'll always be challenged there, and we're continuing to work through that. But we just want to be sure that we are advocating on behalf of the hospitals so that we do not believe that the methodologies are sound, because some are very sound. It's just that if CMS then goes in and has them embedded in the rules, then the cost you would have to actually have to participate in all of those would be enormous. And I do believe, Danielle, that the STS measures were excluded in the ruling. Is that correct?
That's correct, except for one measure, which is, do you participate or do you not participate in a systemic database?
Right. And so that would give you an opportunity to, there's many there that you could check that off. So. So that was the first statement that I would make, and I encourage comments around that for us. The other is just on validation. Through the demonstration project, the HQID project, many of you have proposed many different ways that CMS could improve on validation. I think they're making steps. We're not there yet, and working with them on a validation process that is much more streamlined, let's call it that. We will continue to put forth ideas because as they continue to add quality measures, there'll need to be much more opportunity to streamline that validation. That was just my comment. Daniel, did you have others?
Well, you know, actually, Stephanie, I'll just add to your point on the validation that in the inpatient rule, CMS declined to alter the chart validation process, and so it is unlikely that they will make that change as described by Nicole in the outpatient setting either.
Okay. Well, with that, I think we can turn it over to questions now.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to register a question, please press the 1 followed by the 4 on your telephone. You will hear a 3-tone prompt to acknowledge your request. If your question has been answered and you would like to withdraw your registration, please press the 1 followed by the 3. If you are using a speakerphone, please lift your handset before entering your request. One moment, please, for the first question. Our first question comes from the line of Randall Schultz with St. Joseph Hospital. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, I have a question regarding the psychiatric core measure. I know last year I heard a lot about it, and it was supposed to be starting this October, and lately I've heard absolutely nothing about it, and I just want to know what the status of it is.
Christine Van Dusen, I think that might be you.
Yes. I can give a brief update on that. These measures are currently, Joint Commission finished their pilot that they did in 2007. They spent the first part of this year going through and making changes to the measures and presented those measures to NQF for endorsement. Where the status of them currently is they are offered as a core measure set effective with October 1st, 2008 discharges. And if you go to the Joint Commission's website, and because these are Joint Commission-only measures, that's where all of the specifications will be under the performance measure tab on the Joint Commission website. And we will have these measures in our tools to collect. But at this point, because they are not NQF-endorsed, they are not required for the freestanding psychiatric hospitals.
Okay, because I know we're at a general community hospital with a psych department, inpatient psych, and we're not accredited by JACO. We're HVAP accredited.
Okay.
So I know, because in the pilot, when I'd heard about it, I had inquired about the possibility of joining in the pilot and was told that it was only open to JACO hospitals.
Correct.
So from this, at this standpoint, then, from a CMS standpoint, it's not going to be a mandated.
Correct.
Okay,
not
great.
Yet.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from the line of Linda Goh with St. Vincent Hospital. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
We would like to know how to print these slides.
The slides?
Station.
We yeah, we will be providing a link in the next, I think it's 48 hours. Andrea, you can help me there. We'll be sending out a communication that will include a link to the slide deck and the audio.
In the audio portion, yeah, within the next day or so.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, to register a question, you can press the 1 followed by the 4. Our next question comes from the line of Lorraine Vitale with South Miami Hospital. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, this is Millie Selgis. I'm here with Lorraine Vitale, and we have a question on page 18. I'm sorry, slide 18. Can you please explain that validation method, the proposed validation method, and what do they mean by calculation? Hospital validation score would be based on a percent agreement. Do we know what that percent agreement is going to be for the, let's say, for AMI, for pneumonia, or not yet?
I am, well, these are for the outpatient process?
No, it's for the RACDAPU inpatient program. It's slide number 18.
Right, I'm sorry. This is the validation process that is proposed for the outpatient, and it may be confusing in the heading. It responds to criticism of what's done on the inpatient side, so they're going to try something new on the outpatient side.
So the heading is incorrect?
No, it's correct, but it may be confusing in the way that it's worded. Sorry about that. It's for the outpatient side, but they're proposing to do something different because of the criticism on the inpatient side. But as Danielle said, in the inpatient prospective payment system final rule, they explicitly state that they're not going to change the validation on the inpatient side in this cycle.
Okay, great, because that's very confusing. We thought, you know, for sure. They could just have gone over this.
Sorry about that.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, that's it.
All right, thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Steve Durbin with Providence Health and Services. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Thanks. Good morning. In the ruling, did CMS indicate at all prospectively when they might go to all payer data for discharge-based measures?
I'm assuming you mean in the inpatient rule, since we just had that confusion. There are some measures that they are taking for 2010 that you would expect to be all payer, but they don't have the infrastructure at this time to do that. And I don't think that it was very clear as to when they think they will have the capacity to do that. Although, certainly, I would think, given the number of measures that they're recommending next year, that they would be putting some thought into that over the next year to try to figure out how they would build that infrastructure. But I can say, to be very frank, that is something that comes out of CMS's administrative budget, and so it's not something that I think they are working very quickly on. Nicole, I don't know if you have anything to add there.
No, I think that's pretty much what I saw there, too. They kind of threw that out there in the proposed rule, and then they kind of pulled it back and said, we'll just go with Medicare data because we don't have this infrastructure.
Okay. Can I sneak in a second question?
Sure.
Any hints? Yeah.
This is Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie.
Now, how many questions do we allow someone that's going to be making us all jealous in a few months? Just congratulations. I'm just kidding. You go ahead.
Thanks. I was wondering if there was any hints around of what they're doing with value-based purchasing. The last thing we saw at CMS was about a year ago, I believe.
Well, in the rule, CMS did ask some questions about whether or not it would be appropriate for them to publicly display test data. So they basically would take that methodology that they put out last November, run the data, see how it turned out, and potentially put that up on the public website. Needless to say, as I think you might guess, most of us said we didn't think it was appropriate to post public to post test data on the websites that the beneficiaries use, but that we thought CMS would that it would be appropriate for them to share that data back with the hospital for their information to give them a sense of where they would land if value-based purchasing went forward. But that's not something that they finalized in this rule. They simply repeated back the comments they got and didn't give an indication of what exactly they would do. But in terms of implementation of value-based purchasing overall, certainly the ball is in Congress's court at this point. It is not something that they put, obviously, were able to put in this physician fix rule that we talked about or the MIPA legislation, but it's something that there are a lot of congressional champions for and something that we expect to continue coming back up in Congress.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's all my questions.
Thanks, Steve. We have a follow-up question from the line of Lorraine Vitale from South Miami Hospital. Please proceed with your question.
Yes, I'd like to know when the following measures will become publicly reported in SCIP: the normothermia, beta blocker, glucose levels, and hair removal, and also when in AMI will the lipid test measures become reportable. Do you know?
Public.
Is that
Christine?
Paul or Danielle, can either of you address that?
This is Christine. I can take a stab at some of that. CMS for on Hospital Compare, CMS, a joint commission has been publicly reporting the SCIP measures, the cardiac, the use of beta blocker, and they started requiring that last January with January 8th discharge or January 2008 discharges, and so expect to see that posted when Joint Commission updates quality check. Now CMS just added that measure. Starting with this coming January 2009 discharges, And so it won't be required to be displayed until they display that quarter's worth of data. The normothermia measure at this point is not NQF endorsed. I really haven't heard much more about the status of that measure of what they're going to do with it. I know they're looking to do some changes to its specifications.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the two AMI, those LDL measures, those are still considered test measures. So, again, they will not be publicly displayed until they become NQF endorsed and then adopted by in the rules.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have no further questions at this moment. I'll turn the call back to you.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our time today. Definitely thank you to our speakers, and thanks to everyone on the line for participating today. And please check your emails. You'll be getting a communication that will include both, as we mentioned, a link to the presentation and the audio, as well as an evaluation form that will give you an opportunity to give us some feedback on today and request any specific information that you'd like in future calls. Our next call is scheduled for October 6th. So with that, thank you, everyone, and have a great rest of the week.
Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the conference call for today. We thank you for your participation and ask that you please disconnect your line.